She was named by the Smithsonian Institution as one of the most influential women in the 20th century. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Helen Caldicott.
Well, that's very sweet of you, but you haven't heard what I'm going to say yet. It's an absolute joy to be in this beautiful church. It does make a difference, doesn't it? You know, I'm a pantheist, so I fit in nicely here, but I do feel, when I speak from a pulpit, a special privilege, and I always feel I get a bit more help. Okay, we're in the middle of a presidential election, the most important election ever to have been held in the history of the human race, without a skerrick of doubt. I won't go into the dynamics of that election because that isn't what I'm here to do, but I will go into the three major issues confronting the human race and all other animals and plants. And suffice it to say, if we don't fix these issues, our future is grim. We probably won't survive. What worries me, and having travelled extensively in this country, knowing many of the politicians as I do, and I've just been in Canada too, where many of them are very ignorant, that they don't understand science and they don't understand medicine. And without a background in medicine and science and biology, they don't know what they're doing. And as we see after what's happened in Wall Street, the whole country is pretty well run by business people who are gamblers and gambled with our money and their money and the bank's money and God knows what. There are some fantastic articles in the op-ed section of the New York Times today talking about what actually happened. And as things got more and more obtuse and arcane in Wall Street and they started these derivatives and hedge funds and God knows what, the computers were used in a rather specific way to take the money and play around with it. And many of the people dealing with these hedge funds and derivatives didn't even understand what was happening. There have been predictions in the past that computers would take over, and it's actually what's happened. And so to clean up the mess is very difficult because no one quite understands how it occurred and what the dynamics are and how to get into the system to fix it. Suffice it to say, I think the government should take over. I think that governments are set up by the people, of the people, and for the people to look after the people and to use the people's tax dollars for their benefit and not for the benefit of people to get rich or banks. I think that the dollar has superseded God in America, and although many Christians would deny that, it has. And what did Jesus say? It's more difficult for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven than a camel to pass through the eye of a needle. And how many rich men have I treated on their deathbeds? There was one who had a metastatic carcinoma, and the surgeon came into his room in the hospital in New York and he pulled out his bedside table, which was stacked with money, and he pointed to that and he said, "Fix me." And the surgeon said, "I can't." And he pointed again and he said, "Fix me." And that was the first time in his life that money didn't do what he wanted. Furthermore, when he died, he couldn't take it with him. Power, as Kissinger said, is the ultimate aphrodisiac. We've got a lot of blokes around in this country, I think, who need something else to supplant that. Maybe I'm joking, Viagra. Then I read an article today about what is happening with the Pentagon. There's this character, I can't remember his name, Curran or Cutton or something, down in one of the southern states, who learned how to rot the Pentagon. Is that an American word, rot? You understand? Yeah. I never know if I'm using Australianisms or... and anyway, he rotted it for missile defense. And this happens in the Pentagon all the time, where money is extruded and taken and given by congressmen and senators, A, because they build a lot of weapons industries within their district, so it provides jobs. B, because Lockheed Martin, Boeing, Raytheon, Northrop Grumman are into stealing your tax dollars. And the missile defense system will never work, and I might get into that if I have time. There's no possible physical way that missile defense will ever work. I mean, if you're trying to, just briefly, Russia's missiles are MIRVed. MIRVing means multiple independent reentry vehicles, so they might have 8 bombs on one missile. They launch the missile, goes into space. The bus continues, these are Pentagon terms, with its passengers, which are the hydrogen bombs. And then out of that single target come 8 more targets. And so America launches an anti-ballistic missile with a kill vehicle that hones in only on the specks of light and reflection of light as these bombs hurtle through space. One kill vehicle will never hit 8, A. B, you can confuse the kill vehicle by putting Mylar balloons amongst the hydrogen bombs, and then the kill vehicle doesn't even know what's going on, and lots of what they call chaff, but aluminium pieces, and it's totally confused. And every test they've done, with only one target and one kill vehicle, and the target sending out radio signals saying, here I am, here I am, here I am, never worked. None of them have ever worked. None of them. But they have spent, what, $110 billion of your money on this aimless, stupid, ridiculous project, which is provocative because Russia says, oh yeah, you're building a missile defense system? Well, we'll just supersaturate it and build more missiles. So does China. The psychology behind this is aimless, but it's stupid. I don't understand the men in the White House at the moment. I don't understand some of the men in the Pentagon, and I do think there's a bell-shaped curve of men. On one end are beautiful, lovely men like every one of you here who would never hurt a fly. In the middle are men who would go from 0 to 100 miles an hour in 3 seconds, that's why they want these crazy cars, who would play video games and you walk through airports and see them all the time, and who would go to war and who would, many of them, come back absolutely devastated, as we're seeing. And then I think on the other end, there's a small minority of men whose reptilian midbrain has a toxic reaction to testosterone. Within that group, I would include Donald Rumsfeld, and I want to write a book called Why Men Kill and dedicated to Rumsfeld, have his picture on the frontispiece. You know, oozing testosterone from every pore, he oiled his way across the floor. Cheney, who really... I mean, I could go into my psychological diagnosis of Cheney, but I won't do it here. Bush, who really isn't really worth talking about because he's a puppet, and others. So we're in the hand, and these men who are very disturbed, I believe, and very neurotic, if not sociopathic, are very powerful, and they go to war with each other and kill each other psychologically. And you can see it in corporations, you see it in universities, I saw it in Harvard Medical School. And then the really bad ones, like Rupert Murdoch, who comes from my country, rise to the top like cream, and they have the power. So I think it's very important to psychologically analyse why we're in such a mess, because it's not the bombs that are the problem, although they'll kill us all if they're launched, and global warming, but it's why it happens. And unless we diagnose why a disease is caused, we cannot prevent it or cure it. That's called the etiology of a disease, all right? The etiology is the psychology of these men's minds. And furthermore, know that 53% of us are women. And it's interesting because there's been a lot of work done on hormone receptors in the brain recently. And the most important hormone we secrete, apart from estrogen and progesterone, is one called oxytocin that I learned in medical school stimulates labour, but it's secreted in times of stress. And a woman was doing experiments in a lab in Los Angeles, actually, and she noticed when there was an altercation, the men would go into their room, slam the door, and steam. And the next morning, the women would come in, clean all the benches, and make the coffee and talk. She said, that's interesting. So she did the hormone levels. The testosterone went sky high, and oxytocin went up in women, which is the nurturing hormone. So when there's animosity and problems within relationships, it's us in general who get in there to fix things. That's a very important hormone and needs to be harnessed to save the planet. That means we have to develop, well, we have to have a sense of our own power and our own wisdom, and we have to take over. We do. Now, Now, there are basically, as my lovely friend Bill Coffin, who's now dead, once said, the woman in need of liberation is the woman in every man. It's nice, isn't it? Now, I'm going to talk about the three basic threats facing the planet. I want you to take it in. I know that at the end, many of you will feel very depressed and hopeless. I will give you a sense of hope at the end, and there's a way to fix all of this. But I also encourage you, as I'm going to give you a bad diagnosis, three bad diagnoses, that you react to what I've said with your emotions. Don't rationalize it away. Don't say, well, she's, you know, she made a few mistakes, so I'll discount everything. That's shock and disbelief. First stage of grief. Depression can be profound. Go with it. Don't have a drink. Don't take your Zoloft. Feel it. Then you get through to a stage of anger, and it's during that stage of anger and indignation where the neurons get turned on and suddenly you know what you're going to do. Lots of people say, what can I do? Well, I'm not going to spoon feed you like babies, right? You're going to work it out yourself, and you've all got intuition, which I don't know where it comes from, but if you're quiet in your garden with your roses or in the woods, you will suddenly know what you're going to do. But stay with the feelings, okay? I know it's not very American to feel bad. Now, the first issue I'm going to talk about is global warming. I've just updated my book, If You Love This Planet, that I wrote in 91, about global warming, deforestation, species extinction, overpopulation of us. In the year 1800, there were 1 billion of us. There are 6.7 billion now. That's 200 years worth. We're increasing exponentially. We have to put a stop to it. I won't get into that yet. You can ask me in question time how you do that. We live in a chemical soup of toxins. There are 80,000 chemicals in common use. I won't go into that either, but the chemical companies, they've taken over the EPA now and all the standards, and we're exposed to really nasty stuff. I'll give you an example. I bet you all drink water out of plastic bottles, or most of you. Those plastic bottles are made of polycarbonate. They excrete bisphenol A into the water, which has hormone-mimicking effects, i.e. estrogen. So if you have latent prostatic cancer or breast cancer or the like, you could be stimulating your cancer cells. There's a recent scientific study to say that little boys now, many of them are being born with smaller than normal penises and undescended testicles. The cause, one of the causes they postulate, is this bisphenol A. Little girls, particularly little black girls, are having early menarche, you know, at 5 and 6, getting breasts and periods. They think one of the reasons is they drink a lot of Coke out of these bottles, and they're drinking this hormone mimicker. A, water is in the tap. It's potable and it's fine. B, do not ever, ever drink water out of plastic bottles again. Millions are made a year. And fancy charging $6 for a bottle of water. And you're drinking it out of a bottle that will last forever. And as you make plastic, huge quantities of toxins are excreted into the environment, carcinogens. You know, it's clever. The person who thought to sell water out of bottles was clever. And now everyone sort of walks around with a bottle of water, like at the sort of Freudian oral anal stage. But soon they'll be selling, oxygen cylinders, and we walk around with an oxygen cylinder on our back. Do you see where it's going? That's just one example of the chemical toxins we live with. Never use those Teflon pans. If you heat a Teflon pan up to high temperatures and put a canary near it, it dies. You know, the paper they wrap McDonald's in now, it's got a shiny surface on one side to prevent the grease leaking out. That's Teflon. It's toxic and it's carcinogenic. The containers for your popcorn lined with Teflon, the stuff they wrap up your meat in the supermarkets, that shiny surface is Teflon. I could go on and on, I won't, except to say that babies' pacifiers and soft plastic toys and shower curtains have a material called phthalate, which makes it nice and flexible and soft, the plastic. That also is carcinogenic and an estrogen mimicker. So I got off the subject a little. I updated the book and I went through all the literature of global warming, and it scared the bejesus out of me. The IPCC report, the International Panel on Climate Change, which is 3 years old, because by the time they go through every sentence and they all agree, it takes 3 years. And then there's a man called James Hansen, one of your great people, who works at the Goddard Space Center at NASA. And they've been looking at the data. He's a meteorologist. First of all, you know what causes global warming, don't you? You all know that it's CO2 gas, and that is produced when we burn oil, coal, gas, and wood. It comes from fossil fuel. Why? Because a tree, over its lifetime, through the action of photosynthesis, sucks in carbon dioxide and creates oxygen and lays the carbon down in its wood. A mature tree takes 500 years to trap the carbon. Then we chop the tree down. Well, why shouldn't we need the wood for all of this stuff? Australia, we're chopping our native forest down. The koalas are endangered. Koalas, they're not bears, incidentally. They're marsupials. And they just fall out of the trees and they die. And we're wood chipping that wood and sending it off to Japan to be turned into paper, lovely Vogue paper, you know, full of ads to how to stop the wrinkles on your face and stuff, which don't work anyway. But why are we doing that? And then the paper gets burnt and releases the trapped CO2 from hundreds of years. You don't have many trees down here, that's true, but there's still a big lumber industry. Do you know you mustn't ever blow your nose on a tree again? This is what I used to blow my nose on. Where is it? It's called a handkerchief. I wash it in the shower when I'm washing my underpants and stuff on my trip. If I don't lose that handkerchief, that will last me till I die. Don't ever use a tree to blow your nose on. Don't use paper towels in the kitchen. Don't use paper serviettes. Use cloth serviettes. That's lesson number one, said the bicolored python rock snake. Where does that come from? The elephant's child. Have you ever read Rudyard Kipling? How the elephant got its trunk? The great grey, green, grizzly Limpopo River, all set about with fever trees. And the elephant's child had satiable curiosity and had a little nose like a mere boot, and he wanted to know what the crocodile had for dinner. So the bicolored python rock snake showed him what the crocodile had for dinner, and the rest is history. But anyway, it's lovely poetry, and I read it to my granddaughter the other day. So CO2. Now, we drive around these SUVs, which do, I don't know, 5 miles a gallon, 10. Hummers line the streets of New York, obscene. I noticed, though, a lot of Priuses out here, and I do know Bob's got an electric truck right here. If you covered all the parking lots in America with solar cells, all of them, there's a huge area. They're making electric cars now with terrific batteries that are rechargeable virtually forever. You plug your car in when you get to work, you unplug it, drive it home, plug it into your house and charge up your house with solar electricity. Don't think about electric cars when you plug it into the sockets here. Where's this electricity generated? Is it nuclear? Coal fire plant, is it? It's coal. So this is global warming electricity, right? You do have a nuclear reactor about an hour south of you. I'll talk about that in a while. So CO2 is responsible for 50% of global warming. Now, when we started off in the Industrial Revolution, there were 280 parts per million of CO2 in the atmosphere. There are now 383. Which is really beyond the point of no return. And why do I say that? Well, you know that they've been looking at the Arctic ice cap, and it's melting in the summer. Right now, it's the thinnest that it's ever been in recorded human history. The Arctic ice serves a very important purpose because when the white light comes in from the sun, it bounces back and is reflected back. As the ice cap melts and the sea turns black, the water absorbs the heat and heats up. Okay, number one, that's called the albedo flip. Albedo is reflection of the white light. Albedo is the absorption of the light heating the water. Now, just next door is the Greenland ice cap, 3 kilometres thick. The Greenland ice cap has started to melt. Now, even just with the Arctic ice melting and the Antarctic is melting too, the seas could rise 15 metres by 2100. The end of this century, 15 metres, is for you 45 feet. Knowing that one third of the human race lives at sea level, in Bangladesh they all live on a delta. Knowing too that as we heat up the planet, the glaciers are melting. Knowing that the glaciers feed the Ganges, where millions of people get their water, and the Yangtze in China, and the Yellow River, and the Colorado that provides your water. I've just been in New Zealand. The glaciers are melting. And without the glaciers, the fresh water will diminish markedly. And as the oceans rise, people who get their water from bores will find that the ocean has polluted the bores and they're drinking salt water, not fresh water. The ramifications are quite vast, and I don't have time to go into the whole story of global warming. Suffice it to say, if the Greenland ice cap melts, and it looks like it is, huge earthquakes occur every many days up there because the great chunks of ice are breaking off and the earth is shaking. The seas could rise 75 metres by the end of this century. As the tropics enlarge north and south, so we'll get epidemics of disease like encephalitis, malaria, dengue fever. This is the medical component of global warming, plus millions of ecological refugees. What worries me is, though, as the human race gets anxious and frightened, they tend to become somewhat belligerent. Not all of us, but people do, and nations do, and tribes. It's kind of tribalism, kind of territorial imperative. And so I'll get into that in a minute, what it means for all of us. But suffice it to say, the meteorologists are so worried that James Hansen says we've got to go back to 350 parts per million to have any chance not to melt the oceans and drown Venice and drown New York and drown Miami. And you're on the water here, aren't you? Drown you. Now, how do you reverse global warming? Well, first of all, it is imperative that we stop burning coal, because coal is just really solid carbon. So if these are coal-powered lights, what are we going to do? Well, you've got to close down your coal-fired plant. Oh, my God. How are we going to live without electricity? I mean, we are so addicted to our computers and our DVDs and our washing machines and our dishwashers and our fridges that we have to remember that Mozart wrote his music without electricity, that Shakespeare wrote by candlelight, that for 3 million years the human race lived without electricity, just to put this into context. But there's a solution to what we have to do. And the other thing to do is the only thing that reverses global warming are trees. If you planted an area the size of Australia, which is the same area as you with trees, it's all desert, but if we did, we'd use up all the CO2 that we've created since we began burning fossil fuels at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. And in the light of that clear and present knowledge, my politicians in Australia are totally out to lunch. Why? Because they're in the pocket of the industry that chops trees down. It's very masculine to have a chainsaw and chop a tree down like that than it is to plant little tiny trees. That's more feminine. There is a psychosexual aspect to much of what I'm talking about today, unfortunately, but needing to be recognised. So global warming is upon us. They're talking about tipping points, and I can't go into the phytoplankton in the sea and the CO2 being absorbed by the oceans, which are dissolving the coral as the oceans become acidified. All sorts of things are happening, and it's very dynamic. In other words, the planet is like a human body. And there are feedback loops. You know, if a person gets a boil, say it's one of those awful strep infections or Staphylococcus aureus, golden staph, and then the patient develops septicemia as the bugs spread throughout the body, you might find the patient starts to go into cardiac failure. And they might have had years ago a streptococcal infection, and they might have kidneys that don't function well, and the kidneys start failing. And then the liver starts failing, and you get to what's called total organ collapse, where you lose your patient no matter what, with very complicated feedback mechanisms and loops. And that's how the planet operates. The ozone's disappearing. Ozone is the skin, it's the integument of the planet. It protects us from ultraviolet light, which turns us blind, produces cataracts, produces melanomas. Incidentally, John McCain has had 4 melanomas with metastases. If he gets elected, it's very possible he could have a recurrence, high on the cards. He would be in chemo and radiation therapy and incapacitated, or he could get a cerebral secondary in his brain and do something untoward before the diagnosis is made, and then we'll have Sarah Palin as president. Now, this is a medical problem that is simply not being addressed by the media or anyone else. It's imperative that we address it, but I've had a melanoma on my back. They're really nasty, nasty cancers, and they spread fast, and also they can stay latent for a long time after you've had your mole removed, and suddenly, bang, 10 years later, you've got lumps as your glands enlarge and the like. Skin cancers, SCCs, BCCs, you must know that, but in Australia we've got an epidemic of it because our ozone's very thin. So the ozone is like a pair of sunglasses around the planet protecting us. The temperature control mechanism is the troposphere or lower layer of atmosphere where the heat gets trapped by these gases that we keep producing with impunity to our detriment and detriment of all other species. The circulatory systems of the oceans and the rivers and the lakes. Now, it's so beautiful. Almost every lake in Canada, and there are millions of them, are so acidic now they're dead organically because they can't sustain any life at all. The trees are the lungs of the earth. The tree is an upside-down lung. This is the trachea. It's like the trunk. Branches into two main bronchi and into little tiny bronchi with alveoli where the oxygen is absorbed and the CO2 is excreted. And it's the opposite way with the tree. The trees can save our lives. It's interesting, I thought the other day, as we're chopping the trees down as fast as the Amazon's being chopped down to grow soybeans to feed the animals in Europe, and also it's being chopped down to make McDonald's hamburgers. And it's also being chopped down to make that fuel for cars. So what we're doing is feeding cars with, what's that fuel, biofuel? You know, 1/5 of the corn grown in America now goes into cars. And anyway, it's very energy intensive and creates more CO2 doing the whole thing growing corn than it does even just to use petrol. Suffice it to say, we have to reverse the present course we're on. And don't worry too much because I do have a prescription. Well, I'll tell you now. I held a conference in Washington a couple of months ago called Nuclear Power and Global Warming, and it was pretty depressing. And the man who runs the LA Port Authority now, David Freeman, who was Jimmy Carter's science advisor and who put the panels, the solar panels on the White House, he stood up at the end and he said, "We can create all the electricity and energy America needs with no nuclear and no carbon." And I said, "You must be kidding, David." He said, "No, we can." I raised the money, commissioned this report done by a brilliant scientist, all costed out. In truth, all your electricity and all your transportation needs can be created with renewable fuels using no nuclear and no coal and no fossil fuels. I invite you to, you can't buy this book, but download it from www.ieer.org. And it's carbon-free, nuclear-free. And this it's really beautifully done. Utah's starting to look at it. Texas is taking it up, and various members of Congress are taking it up. So I'd feel depressed telling you awful stuff without having a solution, like telling you you've got pancreatic carcinoma and there's nothing I can do about it. And you'll probably die in 6 months. That's a really terrible thing to have to do to someone. But we can fix it. That means you do not leave any lights on in the house at night except one light bulb where you are. That means you never dry your clothes in a clothes dryer again. Nuclear power creates 20% of the electricity used here. You can save practically all of that by hanging your clothes out there under the nuclear reactor in the sky. Fancy that! I hear that in some neighbourhoods in America it's rude to hang your clothes outside because Mrs. Brown might see your underpants and your brassiers. I mean, how ridiculous. We always hang our clothes outside. They smell nice, but furthermore, now you've got to. GE makes clothes dryers, refrigerators, good things for life, stoves, nuclear power plants and nuclear weapons. So the more you use electricity, the happier they are and the more money they make. Do you understand? When you walk through those doors that do that, they're global warming doors or nuclear powered doors. When you go into the bathrooms at the airports, you know, you put your hands under a blower. That's a global warming hand dryer. Why don't they have, not paper, why don't they have those towels that you pull down made of cotton that can be rewashed and used hundreds or thousands of times? We've gone totally in the wrong direction, but what I want you to do is become totally aware of how you live. We probably don't need the lights on because there's a skylight there and windows. Do you know? We've become so used to using electricity without even thinking about how we use it. Renewable energy, every cent spent on nuclear power is a steal from making windmills. Oh, I met with a Secretary of Energy up in Alberta. Alberta's a really queer place. It's full of oil, which you are taking, stealing, really, full of coal, which they're digging up, full of natural gas. They're boiling sands that have got coal tar in them, boiling them, and it takes 2 barrels of oil to produce 3 barrels of oil, which is sent down to America. They want to build 4 nuclear reactors, 1,000-megawatt reactors, on an earthquake fault at a place called Peace River. So I went to speak to the energy minister, who he used to make tools or something. He sort of kind of had the IQ of Ronald Reagan. I spent an hour and a quarter with Ronald Reagan. I got to know him probably better than anyone during his 8 years of presidency. And half that time was spent holding his hand, reassuring him, because he got pretty uptight because he knew nothing about nuclear weapons and I'd just written my book, so I kept correcting him. And he kept, you know, when he got anxious, his cheeks would flush, so I'd hold his hand and reassure him. So he quickly established a doctor-patient relationship. You need to assess your patient's IQ to know that they put their suppositories in at the right time and take their tablets. You know, that's just basic medicine. He was a nice old fellow, I have to say, would have been a good chicken farmer. Like the one in power now. And I, you know, we mustn't mince our words now, this is too serious. Anyway, the energy minister, not only was he had an IQ like Ronald Reagan, but he was a nasty man and extremely condescending. And he said, well, you know, wind farms, he said, they're no good. He said, they kill bats. And he said he didn't like the noise of them. And I said, well, you know, you might have hypertension. I have to give you a drug. And there will be side effects. And you will have to live with the side effects for the betterment and benefit of your health. Well, his eyes sort of went cross. He didn't quite understand the argument. Solar power, you know, you live in a place where solar power is absolutely perfect here. You've got sun. Every single house should have a solar panel on right across America. And instead of spending $1 trillion a year on killing and the Pentagon and your money being stolen, that money must immediately be diverted to solar panels right across America. Electric cars, wind farms. Farmers are making more out of their wind farms they are now instead of growing food. But you can grow food underneath the wind farm, you know. Geothermal energy, it's all here, it's ready to go, and it's so exciting, and it will create millions of jobs. It's like the New Deal, when Roosevelt fixed the bridges and the cities and everything. That's what we've got to do. Will we get a president and a Congress who've got the guts, the tenacity, the vision to do that, the intelligence? Well, I've got everything crossed. Everything crossed. So, I won't go further into this, but this is the answer, and it's very exciting, and it will take America out of its depression. More money is now being made with renewable energy than any other form of investment. So invest in it, but also let's do it. And that means politicians have to be educated, and always know that politicians are not your leaders. You are their leaders. They are your representatives, and they have to do what you tell them to do. I could go into the House during the 80s when 80% of people opposed nuclear war. Tip O'Neill would come off chairing the House floor and say to me in his lovely Bostonian accent, what can I do for you, Doctor? Because I had 80% of people behind me. I said, Tip, I want you to play the last epidemic on every TV set in the Congress. He did. He's a lovely man. Now, nuclear power, I haven't got an awful lot of time to go into it. Suffice it to say, You live an hour from a reactor here. If it melts down and your reactors here are really old and the wind's blowing in your direction, do you know what would happen to you? Do you know in that 1,000-megawatt reactor is as much radiation, long-lived radiation, as 1,000 Hiroshima-sized bombs? 100 tons of uranium. And the two reactors that melted down at Chernobyl and Three Mile Island were totally because of human error. We are fallible. We've created a science with which we have to be infallible. If the wind's blowing in this direction and the plume is quite concentrated, you will be enveloped in radioactive isotopes, inhaling them, ingesting them, and the radiation externally will induce what we call acute radiation illness, where the actively dividing cells of your body die, so your hair drops out in big clumps, you start bleeding around the gums, you get awful nausea and diarrhea, and die within 2 weeks. Acute radiation sickness. And I first read about that when I was 15, and I read a book called On the Beach by Neville Shute, when a nuclear war occurred by accident, and the only people left alive were people in Melbourne, and gradually they were irradiated too. It's a terrible thing. And then later, hundreds of thousands of you will develop cancers of various organs, as people did in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So you need to close that reactor down. What do we do with the waste? Well, nuclear power is pretty scary, and I don't actually have time now to go through the whole nuclear fuel cycle, but nuclear power is a carcinogenic industry. It's much worse than smoking. It took us years to educate people about smoking, and what the tobacco companies did was hire firms like Hill and Knowlton to inject doubt into the debate. Well, I don't really think it does cause. And anyway, they're making light cigarettes, you know, smoke. What did it, and, you know, you take the country out of it. What was that ditty? Da, 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 the country, but you can't take the country out of Salem or something like that. Do you remember that? All, and isn't it interesting how they use music to sell their rhubarb, their stuff? Because music must have some sort of very evocative thing in the psyche that gets you to be on side rather than off side. You remember those 8 men standing before Congress with their hands on their hearts saying tobacco didn't cause cancer? But tobacco only kills the smoker. I've stopped lots of people smoking. They hate me for a year or two, but they're later pleased because I shame them. But they stop, helps to save their life. Now, nuclear power creates massive quantities of radioactive waste. First of all, if you live near a reactor, it's continually emitting radiation into the environment. So you could be inhaling tritium, which causes brain cancer, muscle cancer, ovarian cancer, and other forms, and fetal abnormalities. Tritium is radioactive hydrogen, H3. The only thing that stops it escaping is gold, like my gold ring, because it's so dense, it gets out of everything. There's no way to operate a reactor without an escape of massive quantities of tritium. Each reactor needs 1 million gallons a minute of cooling water in a country where it's a lot of drought. And that cooling water is relatively radioactive, and I don't have time here to go into all the elements, but suffice it to say radioactive iodine causes thyroid cancer, cesium-137 causes muscle cancer and brain cancers, strontium-90 causes bone cancer and leukemia, plutonium, and I'll do that in a minute, causes lung cancer, lymphoma, liver cancer, bone cancer, leukemia, testicular cancer, and terrible fetal abnormalities. 250 kilos or 500 pounds of plutonium are manufactured in each reactor every year. It lasts for 500,000 years. It's got a half-life of 24,400 years. Less than 1/1000th of a gram will almost certainly give you cancer. When they injected plutonium into beagle dogs, they couldn't find a dose low enough that didn't give all the dogs cancer. It is the most diabolical material. And I've just read a report, they've had a great conference in Japan about how to use more and more and more plutonium. Plutonium is deadly, and you only need 10 pounds to make a bomb. That's why they fissioned uranium in the Manhattan Project. So it's deadly material. And if that gets into your body, we can't get it out. We can't. And you're doomed. Remember Karen Silkwood, who worked at Kerr-McGee? And she was going to see a New York Times reporter with documents in the back of her car about how Kerr-McGee had texted over the X-ray cracks of the fuel rods that they were making for reactors. And she was going to meet, she was killed. And when they got to her car, the documents were missing. And that was her autopsy. Her liver was full of plutonium, like little stars shooting up. She had been poisoned by Kerr-McGee. So I kid you not, this is deadly material and lasts forever, and tons of it, we're accumulating tons of it. No one knows where to put radioactive waste. Well, they've got 64,000 tons of it here. 64,000 tons. Each year, 30 tons are made from each nuclear reactor. This waste has to be cooled continuously for 20 years or it itself will melt down. So they found a mountain in Nevada called Yucca Mountain, I think an appropriate name, transected by 30 earthquake faults, made of pumice, which is highly permeable. And that's where they want to put the waste, and there'll be 1,500 shipments every year of high-level radioactive waste through Chicago and Long Beach and God knows where, open for terrorists, called the Mobile Chernobyl Bill. And, you know, they work, anyway, Harry Reid, who's a feisty little guy like Harry Truman, you know, he's a Senate Majority Leader, he said over his dead body, does Yucca Flats open, because he's from Nevada. But, you know, he'll die, and then, you know, what will they do then? I suppose they'll... So we've got to stop making this stuff because of the waste, which will leak and seep into the water systems and bioconcentrate in the food chains. You can imagine our descendants waking up in the morning, the breast milk already radioactive, the babies drinking radioactive breast milk, being exposed in utero to radiation, and getting their cancers at 6 instead of 60 because children are so sensitive to radiation, 20 times more than adults. These babies, these children. And what I predict, and my colleagues do too, there will be epidemics of cancer and leukemia. Do you know how hard we fight to save a patient with cancer? We don't have the cure to cancer, let's be frank. Some childhood cancers we can cure, but often, not often, sometimes those children go on to get a second primary cancer from the radiation therapy they've had to cure their cancer, because radiation is carcinogenic and cumulative. Never have an unnecessary X-ray. Do not allow the dentist to X-ray your teeth every year. That's medically contraindicated. Each dose adds to your risk of getting cancer. If you've got a sore tooth, yeah. Don't let doctors practice defensive medicine by X-raying you. My ex-husband was a radiologist. They make a lot of money. But what I'm saying is that our descendants, because we wanted to turn our lights on with this ghastly, diabolical type of technology, they'll be cancer-ridden children, deformed children. You know, at Chernobyl, there are homes full of children now with the most gross deformities. There was a film called Chernobyl Heart, and my colleagues said they've never seen anything like these deformities. 8,000 people have had their thyroids removed around Chernobyl. That's unheard of in the medical literature for thyroid cancer. There are epidemics of leukemia. In fact, open your program. And there's a map of Europe here. Okay? Get it out. Now you can see where the darker red area is, that's where Chernobyl is. And one reactor accident has caused 40% of the European landmass to be radioactive. The dark red areas are very high levels of radiation, cesium, strontium, plutonium, and it graduates downwards. But you can actually see there's a lot of radiation in Scandinavia. They picked it up first. They were monitoring the air. And Gorbachev didn't admit for 10 days that there'd been a gross accident at a reactor. There's radiation in Cumbria and Wales and England. And the government went to the farmers and said, you've got to stop growing your lambs. They're full of cesium. And they said, well, how long do we have to stop growing our lambs? They said, oh, about 100 years. But it's not at 600 years. This is scary. Austria is very contaminated. So is Turkey, although Turkey isn't included in this map. I went to my health food shop the other day and I got, you know, there were Turkish herbs and Turkish dried apricots, and I said, are these apricots radioactive? And he said, well, they're organic. And then I talked to the man who tests the food imported from Europe into Australia, and they do random spot checks. And I said, well, what do you do when you find radioactive food? He said, oh, we dilute it with non-radioactive food. For those of you who are biologists, the solution to pollution when it comes to dilution is fallacious when it comes to radiation, because it reconcentrates back in the body organs. Look at the food you buy, because of globalization, this stuff's ubiquitous. Never buy European food or eat it. Okay? But to think that one accident induced the contamination of practically the whole of Europe is beyond belief for me. And what that means to future generations. We're already seeing increased cancers in Sweden and in France and all across the country. Okay, that's kind of nuclear power in a nutshell. I don't have time to go into it. But you don't kill people to turn on lights. Like, the tobacco companies should not be putting nicotine in the cigarettes to addict people who start smoking. That's wicked. That's wicked. That's not how we practice medicine. And the nuclear industry lie and lie and lie and lie through their teeth. And I've debated with them oftentimes. So, and they've spent $100 million advertising their nefarious wares. This book will give you everything you need to know and more. It's a primer. It's easy to read. Nuclear power is not the answer to global warming. You must all get a copy before you leave, and that's an order. Because I'm your teacher and I'm your doctor. Okay? And if you don't, you're in serious trouble. Now, last but not least, and I don't have really time to go into this in great depth, because we've got to end by 3:15 or something, but you are just next to the port of Los Angeles. Now, do the military ships come in here, George? I know they come into San Diego. I know that a couple of miles from here is an ammunition base, almost certainly housing nuclear weapons. Did you know that? Did you? Well, they say you're not allowed to know it because on account of its national security, but the fact is that they're your weapons. You paid for them. This is your democracy, and you have absolute right to know. Do you know they drive nuclear weapons around in Winnebagos on the highways with submachine guns on the dashboard? Do you know that these ships coming into San Diego, the nuclear-powered ships, have nuclear weapons on them? They're probably transporting them from those ships to the ammunition depot. Find out what is going on at that depot. Insist, demand, and the military has no right to keep you in ignorance, because they're your weapons and it's your life. Do you know what would happen if one of them exploded? I'll tell you, by accident. There's a thing called broken arrows. They drop them sometimes. They have accidents with them. Their safety catches go off. Just near here, right, we're in Los Angeles. It would explode with the heat inside the center of the sun and dig a hole 3/4 of a mile wide and 800 feet deep, turning millions of tons of rock into radioactive fallout. Then 5 miles, and you know, you are within that radius, 5 miles in all directions, every person is vaporized. In Hiroshima, which was a tiny little firecracker of a bomb, a little boy was reaching up to catch a red dragonfly on his hand against the blue sky, and there was a blinding flash, and he disappeared. And if you go to the Hiroshima Museum, there's a shadow on the pavement of that little boy. Never before have we been able to vaporize our fellow human beings. A woman was running with her baby, and she and the baby had been converted to a charcoal statue. 20 miles from here in all directions, radius, everyone's lethally burnt. Winds of 500 miles an hour, hurricanes 100. Suck people out of buildings, turning them into missiles traveling 100 miles an hour. Shards of glass, popcorn, and fly through the air, decapitating people. Then the whole area will be engulfed in a firestorm, and there's a lot to burn in these houses now, plastic and wood, and the fire would consume everything. A raging firestorm, so if you're in a shelter, you'll be asphyxiated. And then if all the bombs are used in the arsenal, a huge cloud of toxic black smoke would rise up and cover the earth with a cloud so thick it blocks out the sun for maybe 4 or 5 years, creating nuclear winter and the end of most life on earth except the cockroaches. That's the other meteorological catastrophe awaiting us if we do nothing. Of the 30,000 hydrogen bombs in the world, Russia and America own 97% of them. So who are the real rogue nations? Russia's got you targeted with 40 H-bombs on New York alone. And almost certainly LA would have 40 to 60 H-bombs because Russia's got 2,500 weapons. She can launch and land in half an hour. And such a redundancy, there are only 240 cities in the Northern Hemisphere. Such a redundancy, everything's targeted. Universities, factories, everything that you hold most dear. And you have 5,500 hydrogen bombs to drop on Russia. And since the Cold War ended, you have now targeted China. Fancy that, for God's sake. And America's got a policy, which you might not know, to fight and win a nuclear war against Russia. How do you win it? You send over a missile, you decapitate Moscow and kill Putin so he can't press his button. Then quickly you launch all your missiles and land 2 hydrogen bombs on each missile silo and you kill the missiles. Millions of people dying, this is called collateral damage, it's really irrelevant to the Pentagon. Now the Russians are a little paranoid. So they've got a missile called the Dead Hand, and if Putin is decapitated, they launch the Dead Hand, which sends a signal to all their missiles to launch with no human input. That's the situation we live in right this minute. And the Russian early warning systems have ceased to work because they haven't afforded to be able to keep them up, and they are clinically paranoid. You don't threaten clinically paranoid patients because they do something really dangerous. On 9/11, you got to the second highest state of nuclear alert from DEFCON 5, 4, 3, 2, and the last one is they turn the keys in the locks and off they go. Why? Because no one knew what was happening. As the international situation becomes more and more anxiety-making and fear prevails ecologically, economically, so we enter a period of an unknown territory. Without these bombs, you could kind of relax. With these bombs, it's more dangerous now than it was at the height of the Cold War when we were all so frightened. And the churches were mobilized and the Catholic bishops were mobilized. We've forgotten. It's the elephant in the sitting room that's never talked about. How often have Obama and McCain talked about it? Once or twice. I was going to show you a Trident submarine because they probably come into your ports. It's time. And I was going to tell you what I'd do if I was president. What I will say is, though, if I was president, I would immediately fly over to Putin. I would negotiate a treaty with him to abolish nuclear weapons in 5 years between both countries. Then Israel would be forced to follow. She's the third largest nuclear nation in the world. And France and England and China, and then we'd fix it. So it's up to this country and its wisdom to save the planet. That's what I do. Thank you. There's a question at the back of the room. That's a very good question. How do you incapacitate the weapons that we have now without neutralizing the world? It's a good term. You undo them, it's called decommissioning, and they take out the plutonium triggers, 10 pounds, they're called pits, and you take them down to Amarillo, Texas, and store them in things called gravel gerties. They're great big gravel igloos, so if one of the pits explodes, because that's critical mass, it tampers down the explosion. But you've got the plutonium for the rest of time. The genie's out of the bottle, Pandora's box is open. Do we have the wisdom, intelligence, psychological development to contain ourselves and stop fighting and killing? Because any war in the world now, anywhere in the world, could trigger a nuclear war between. So if we undo all the weapons and we get the other countries to do the same and we police it, yes.
Could you say something about the campaign Yeah, well, it's a it's a wicked campaign. They're spending over $100 million a year hiring Hill and Knowlton, who did the advertising for the tobacco industry, to say that people, that nuclear power plants are emission-free and they're the answer to global warming. I've described how they're not and how they emit radioactive materials all the time. And if you live near one, you could get cancer. So that's what... They call it a renaissance. Now, the truth is that with the collapse of the banks and your economy, nuclear industries are socialised industries. Isn't that funny? Communism. It's all paid for by the federal government, plus the insurance. You can't buy insurance for a nuclear accident. It's all covered by the federal government. Isn't it interesting? And so is the Pentagon. So the truth is that much of your money goes into a socialist system, although they harp on and on and on about free enterprise and privatisation. It's a fallacy that they're emission-free. It's a fallacy that they're an answer to global warming. And nuclear power plants cost $12 to $15 billion to build, each of them. And that's a direct steal from the windmills and the solar thermal systems that could be set up and the geothermal energy that could be tapped right now. I mean, you remember when the Second World War occurred and they bombed Pearl Harbor? Remember when FDR said we're now in a national emergency, and he decreed by mandate that every single industry get into bombs, planes, tanks, and within 6 months every industry in America was a war industry. Well, we're at that stage now. The planet is heating disastrously. The oceans are going to rise 15 to 75 metres by the end of this century, according to predictions. We're at risk of nuclear war every second of every day, and we've got these god-awful nuclear power plants around which leave a legacy to our future descendants. It's the Earth ending in a whimper and not a bang. So we have to understand that we must be on a war footing, and we can fix it. We can fix it.